You can't talk about military spending without talking about the United States. We spend a great deal on our armed forces and their hardware, more than any other country by a large measure. At the other end of the scale, though, is Costa Rica in Central America. That country disbanded its permanent military not long after World War II, and it stayed disbanded. How has that worked for Costa Rica? That's one of the main questions behind a documentary produced and co-directed by Michael Dreiling, who is an associate professor of sociology at the University of Oregon. With Matthew Eddy, he produced the film A Bold Peace. Michael Dreiling, thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, Jeff. Thank you for inviting me, and I'll look forward to sharing some of the details about the extraordinary country of Costa Rica and what the film's about.
So the country has been essentially military-free for decades now. Any military presence at all?
Precisely. Actually, it's been generations now when we start to put it in context. Yeah, since 1948, after a short six-month revolution, which restored democracy, the country, and a leader who's known by all Costa Ricans as Don Pepe, he led this band of insurgents, and after that set up a junta, an interim government, to abolish the army, extend suffrage to women and Afro-Caribbeans, and a number of other significant social reforms were instituted at that time. And since then, for over 65-plus years now, no army. The police force is their only formal defense, and it's a civilian-controlled and civilian-operated police force. There have been some interesting skirmishes, two invasions from Nicaragua, an attempt by the U.S. to set up a covert military base on their soil. All those are events that are told throughout the film. But they have not themselves had an army.
Is this a difficult concept, a country without military, to wrap your mind around, given that you're an American and given our attitude toward the military?
I find it actually extraordinary. I have a sister who's a lieutenant colonel in the Army. I have siblings and uncles and family who've been in and served in various wars the United States has been a part of. So, yes, it was a bit of a stretch. I mean, I understood the concept from history. I understood, it as an ideal, but actually seeing it work in Costa Rica has been pretty amazing.
I'm still trying to figure out how Costa Rica did it coming out of a civil war. It seems like at a time when there's been this armed clash that the usual human sort of inclination would be to hang on to the guns just in case there's more trouble.
You would think, right? And part of the story, the way we tell the story, at least, and I think as most people in Costa Rica understand it, is it was a unique historical moment, and a unique figure, José Figueres Ferrer, who stepped into that political moment and led with a very bold vision. And his vision was informed, actually, in part by some of the points made by Madison and Thomas Jefferson with respect to the costs of having a standing army. So there's actually a tradition within the United States that had a critical view of a standing army and the costs of that standing army to the burgeoning democracy. Now, the Founding Fathers the Founding Fathers who raised those points never won out the debate, but it nonetheless was a critical debate at the founding of the United States as well. And we also, of course, have heard from, President Eisenhower, his extraordinary statement on the costs of a military and the costs of the military-industrial complex to both democracy as well as to other social objectives. So that kind of wisdom wasn't just present in that historical moment in Costa Rica. That wisdom or that critical insight has been found in other countries and other contexts. And José Figueres studied those traditions in Europe and the United States. He was a serious student of Jefferson's, in fact. And he brought those ideas to his initial critiques of the Calderón presidency in 1944 when he was put into exile following a radio broadcast where he delivered a speech that arouses the concerns of the ruling party at the time, and was forced into exile into Mexico. So he took those ideas that were around, distilled them into a practical solution for the woes of Costa Rica, as well as a solution to what other countries in Latin America could embrace. It was his idea that having a military in a small country actually makes you more vulnerable. Makes you more vulnerable to coups by major powers, state-sponsored coups by the United States, for example, or the upending of democratic leadership through an internal schism that could lead to a military coup. So by removing those forces that would take power undemocratically, you would strengthen democratic institutions and democratic outcomes. That was one of the arguments. And so he brought these ideas together at a moment where people were concerned about the stability of their democracy and was able to forcefully make the case that the best way to stay safe and retain your democracy is by trusting and upholding international law and building a stable, socially just society based upon the principles of the middle-of-the-road socialism found in Denmark.
Michael Dreiling's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, Associate Professor of Sociology at the University of Oregon. He is also the co-director and producer with Matthew Eddy, who co-directed and wrote A Bold Peace, a documentary about Costa Rica, a country that disbanded its military in the late 40s, and it has stayed disbanded. They'll be showing the film tonight at 6 o'clock at Straub Hall, room 145 on the University of Oregon campus. But you can join our conversation now at 800-838-3760 over the phone. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Michael, we cribbed a little bit out of your trailer, so I'm going to let the folks listen to just a few seconds of
what you
put together for A Bold Peace.
He first disarms the communists. Then he eliminates the army. And then he disarms his own army that was expecting that he would make war against the dictators in the rest of Central America.
The most important consequence of not having an armed force in Costa Rica was the financing of public institutions, and most of them related to social well-being.
The social reforms that Don José Pepe Figueres initiated in the 40s were very much like the New Deal. And so their experiment, their social democratic experiment, has been marvelous. They shot for the pie in the sky, and I think they've achieved incredible things.
So what are the incredible things, Michael Dreiling? What has the country done with its money without a military?
That's a great point. Well, one of the things that strikes me the most is, I mean, Costa Rica now is one of the most popular tourist destinations in the world. And for North Americans, it's top on the list for outside international travel in the Americas. It's also ranked and tied for the safest country in Latin America. The people of Costa Rica live longer than the people of the United States, and they do that on a fraction of the per capita income that we have. The people of Costa Rica also rank consistently among the happiest people on the planet. They have universal health care. Everybody has access to health care, and it's very good health care at that. They have college and university in the public system, no tuition. If you pass the admissions test, you get in. No matter what your income background is, you get in, no fees, no tuition. Hmm. You have a country that has now run its electricity grid for almost a year, just this last year, on renewables. A third of the country is protected and conserved among the most biodiverse regions of the world. And so you can go on this remarkable achievements. Instead of spending a dime on military, they put 8% of their gross domestic product on education. So they have high technical education, a high level of literacy, one of the highest levels of literacy in the developing world.
And just by comparison, I want to point out that we spend about 4% of our GDP on military. So think about double what we spend on military being spent on education. That's what we're talking about in Costa Rica.
That's correct. And so you have a small country that, instead of investing in an army, they've moved those resources into social objectives. Because what is an army going to do in Costa Rica? I mean, what's going to happen if they're invaded by the United States or Mexico? What is an army going to do? Instead, what their constitution has is a call for the president to ask civilians to arm and defend our country in the event of an invasion, which is, in fact, what has happened twice.
So with the Nicaraguan invasions, the Costa Ricans stood up and got weapons and got ready to defend?
Exactly. In both cases, following the 1948 revolution, the deposed leader of Costa Rica sought refuge in Nicaragua under the rule of Somoza, who was a dictator at the time, supported by the United States. And Calderon went to Nicaragua, where he then prepared and set up a counter-revolutionary force with the support of the Nicaraguan army. And they invaded in 1951 and again 2 years later. During those invasions, they were repelled not by an army, but by citizen militia that was organized by and called by President Figueres.
So the movie is only it's a 2014 publication date or copyright date. What prompted you and Matthew Eddy to take up the subject when you did?
Well, we actually just finished the film. I think the 2014 date was an older concept date.
Ah.
So it is literally we just finished the film, and so the screening tonight at the University of Oregon campus is the first screening of the finished film, and then we'll do premieres at various film festivals in the months ahead. So we're just now in a release phase for the film.
Mm-hmm.
What prompted it was my former student, Matthew Eddy, who's now a professor and will be at Southern Utah State University. He was studying, actually, global peace attitudes and found that, consistently, the people of Costa Rica rank very high on global peace attitudes. They have a very high level of trust in peace, the principles of nonviolence, the principles of international law. And those attitudes were quite striking. They have a high level of trust with their own institutions. And this is related to their high level of happiness, both happiness in a given year, at a given point in their lives, but long-term happiness. They report happiness over many years of their lives. And so those attitudes he was studying, and so it prompted him to actually go down and do some further study and survey of students in Costa Rica, and found that 91% of Costa Ricans would object to any attempt to bring back the military.
Really?
Now you think about that, 91%. That's about as close to a social consensus as you can obtain on any issue.
I was going to ask, given that it's been generations, if there is any constituency that still says, you know, we really should have an army, and it sounds like with 91% say no, it's not a very big constituency, if it even exists, organized.
Right. It came up recently, and it's come up a couple times recently, and one time when I was down there and we were doing interviews, in fact, and it was part of the national discussion, and of course it was quickly stifled. But one time it came up in 2011, Nicaragua occupied, and some may remember this, it was kind of attributed to a mistake on Google Maps. They took over an island off the northeast part of Costa Rica. And some people speculate that they did this for the decision to build this new canal across the isthmus of Central America and Nicaragua there.
Mm-hmm.
But nonetheless, Costa Rica, rather than firing a shot, saying, you've now occupied territory that is internationally recognized as Costa Rica, they immediately took the issue to The Hague, to the International Court, and the hearings began, the evidence was produced, the debates ensued, and the decision of the International Court ruled that Costa Rica, indeed, that is their territory, and since that point, Nicaragua has withdrawn their forces and has agreed to the ruling. So they resolved an international dispute involving a military occupation through international law rather than through force of arms. And that tells you something about their commitment to these kinds of processes and conflict resolution processes.
Really? Costa Rica is the arms-free country. Here's a call from Vince in Eugene. Welcome to The Exchange with Michael Dreiling.
Hello, I'm really enjoying the show. I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Colombia some 35 years ago, And on the way back from my service, I stopped in several countries in Central America where there were military everywhere, very intimidating. The minute you got off the airplane, there were tanks on the airfield. But in Costa Rica, it was so amazingly friendly, and everyone was very welcoming, and the people seemed very happy, as you said earlier. And I was very impressed, and I did actually meet a couple of Peace Corps volunteers in Costa Rica, and I asked them what they were doing, and they said, well, we were told that the children need to learn more music, and we'd like to start some children's orchestras and maybe a national symphony. And I said, wow, that's amazing. And I said, the country seems very happy and stable. And they said, yes, in fact, it's considered like the Switzerland of Central America, that it's so stable and without an army that other Central American countries send their money there to be housed and kept safe. Is that still true?
All right, let's find out. Thanks for that, Vince.
Yeah, thank you, Vince. It is true. The second largest bank, here's an interesting fact, the second largest bank, at least in 2014, is the National Bank of Costa Rica. Now, it's there's two large banks. One's called Banco Popular, which is a cooperative. So Costa Rica nationalized its banking system after the revolution. And then the other is Banco Nacional. And those two banks, both of which are very large, not only are co-ops, but they also deal with international transactions. It's a very stable banking system as a result. And so, yes, it's true, there is considerable international parking, but it's fairly transparent. It's not like we're going to see with the Panama Papers, which has a very lacks transparency in the same way that these national banks do, because they're a part of a nationalized and highly regulated banking system in Costa Rica.
Michael, I only have time for one more question. I mean, is Costa Rica a bit of a paradise, or are there some cracks in what's going on there?
Oh, yeah. We certainly go through the threats to their peace, if you will, which we describe them. They're growing inequality. The free trade agreement that was Costa Rica barely went through the they basically had to have a national referendum, which pushed the Central American Free Trade Agreement onto the country. It was the last country to approve it. And since then, we see the disappearing convenience stores, we see the Walmarts, and we see the big investments from, you know, U.S. franchises and food stores. This transformation is contributing to growing inequality in the country. That growing inequality and the poverty is a threat. The other piece is the drug trafficking that runs through Costa Rica, all of Central America, which also is related to arms trafficking. So the violence that comes with that drug trafficking is a concern. It's one of the reasons why some of the Costa Rican people have asked maybe we should consider a military to protect from the drug cartel forces or the risks related with that.
All right. A lot to learn from the film. It's called A Bold Peace, so an audience will get a chance to look at it tonight at 6 o'clock at Straub Hall, room 145 on the University of Oregon campus. It is co-directed by Michael Dreiling, Associate Professor of Sociology at the University of Oregon, and his former student, Matthew Eddy. Michael, thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange, and best of luck with the premiere, as it were, tonight.
Thank you very much, Jeff, and you have a wonderful day. I really appreciate this.
You too. Take care.